Psalm 27. We'll read all 14 verses, Psalm 27. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, come upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Though a host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. The war should rise against me, and this will I be confident. One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, and to inquire in his temple. For in the time of trouble he shall hide me in his pavilion. In the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me. He shall set me upon a rock. And now shall mine head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me. Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy. I will sing, I will sing praises unto the Lord. Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me, and answer me. When thou sayest, Seek ye my face, my heart said unto thee, Thy face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me, put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help, leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up. Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies. For false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Wait on the Lord, be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. I want to center our thoughts tonight around verse 13. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord. And what we want to notice there is the land of the living. The land of the living. It occurs 15 times, all in the Old Testament. We see it in Psalm 52 and verse 5, if we turn there. And there it is used in reference to the mighty men of the earth. It says, God, in verse 5, God shall likewise destroy thee forever. He shall take thee away and pluck thee out of thy dwelling place and root thee out of the land of the living. And again, that's going back to the mighty man there in verse 1. It says, He will root thee out of the land of the living. I believe that's talking about death of the mighty man. We see it's also used in reference to Christ in the book of Isaiah, chapter 53. Book of Isaiah, chapter 53, in verse 8. He, that is Jesus, was taken from prison and from judgment. And who shall declare his generation? For he was cut off out of the land of the living. Talking about his crucifixion. Again, death. For the transgression of my people was he stricken. It's obvious from these verses, and again it occurs 15 times in the Old Testament, but it's obvious that this has reference to the world in which both the wicked and the righteous live their lives, the land of the living. It has reference to our life upon this earth. We want to go through Psalm 27. We want to see some characteristics of this land of the living. And it's by implication what is implied here in Psalm 27. We see many characteristics of the land of the living. We also see that you and I, the saved, can experience God in this land of the living. We see in verse 1 the first three words, the Lord is. And then if you connect that, the Lord is the land of the living. The Lord is in the land of the living. We see in verse 13, the Lord in the land of the living. So the land of the living is referring to this world, the place that you and I live our lives. And the Lord is in the land of the living. Now in verse 13, David says, I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So what was it that made the difference in David's life as far as the land of the living is concerned? It was the Lord. And the fact that he believed in the Lord. But the Lord was what made the difference in his life. And if the Lord does not make a difference in our life, nothing else will. The Lord is to make a difference in our life. We live in the land of living, but the Lord makes a difference in our lives. That is, we don't have to live like everyone else lives in the land of living. We don't have to get sucked up in the characteristics of the land of living. We don't have to be overcome with the things that we're going to look at here in the land of living. We can experience the life, we can experience God in the land of the living. But notice several things here as we go through Psalm 27. Several things that are implied as far as the characteristics of the land of the living. It says in verse 1, the Lord is my light. That implies that the world, the land of living, is a place of darkness. But the Lord makes a difference. He's our light. But we'll come back to that later. The Lord is my light. So the land of the living is a place of darkness. It also says that He's my salvation. That is, He's my deliverer. That implies that the world is a place of bondage as well. So the world is, the land of the living is a place of darkness. The land of the living is a place of bondage. He asks a question, whom shall I fear? Land of the living is a place of fear. The Lord is the strength of my life. And as you read through Psalm 27, you see David is speaking from personal experience. He has a personal relationship with the Lord. The Lord is the strength of my life. That means the world, the land of living, the implication is, has a strong draining effect. But again, the Lord makes the difference. Then he goes on and he repeats himself when he said, whom shall I fear? He repeats it again, a little different wording, but whom shall I be afraid? In verse 2, he says, when the wicked. So the world, the land of living, is a place of wickedness. He then goes on and he mentions mine enemies. And my foes come upon me to eat up my flesh. So we see it's a place of confrontation. It's a place of attack. It's a place of enemies. He mentions the enemies again in verse 6. He mentions them again in verse 12. So it is a place of enemies, the land of the living. It is a place of confrontation. It is a place of attack. He mentions again in verse 3, though a host should encamp against me. Again, it is a place of confrontation. He then goes on in verse 5, and he says, for in the time of trouble. So the land of the living is a place of trouble. It is a place of difficulty. He goes on in the latter part of verse 5, and he says, the Lord shall set me upon a rock. Again, verse 13, he's saying, the Lord has made the difference. I would have fainted but I didn't because of the Lord. And we see here the Lord sets his feet upon a rock. That means that the world is a place of danger. It is a place of instability. It's a place of danger. It is a place of instability. Again, in verse 6, he mentions the enemies round about me. In verse 9, he says, "Hide not thy face far from me, put not thy servant away in anger," referring to his sin. The world, the land of the living, is a place of sin, is a place where we are constantly face to face with sin, our own sin and the sin of others. Everywhere we go, there's sin. We're brought face to face with that which is against God. He goes on and he, in verse 9, he says that the Lord has been my help. Those who need help, that implies weakness. The land of living is a place of weakness. It is a place where we need help. He then says in verse 10, when my father, or verse 9 again, he says, "Leave me not, neither forsake me." He's pleading with the Lord. The world or the land of the living is a place of loneliness. But it's also a place of terrible possibilities. It says in verse 10, when my father and my mother forsake me. He knew that was possible. There are terrible possibilities in the land of the living. You and I have no idea of all the things that could possibly happen. But the land of the living is a place of terrible possibilities. We see also in verse 11, he prays that the Lord would teach him, the Lord would lead him. And again, it's because of his enemies. But it shows the world that he needs teaching. He needs leading. The world, the land of the living, is a place of ignorance. It's a place of confusion. We see also in verse 12, he says, "Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies." Land of the living is a place of opposition. It is a place of strife. The enemies desire to destroy David, in particular Saul and his army. Verse 12 also, he speaks of false witnesses. Land of the living is a place of lies. We see also in verse 12, the last part of that verse, it says that word cruelty. Land of the living is a place of cruelty. And then lastly, we see, "I had fainted unless I had believed." I had fainted. Land of living is a place of great weariness. So the land of living is really a terrible place. It's not a place, if you really study the world out, it's not a place that you should desire to live. But we have no choice. This is where we live. Notice in the book of Ezekiel, we see this phrase, "the land of the living," again. Keep in mind everything we've said so far concerning the land of the living. And we see here in Ezekiel chapter 32, just want to notice a phrase that reoccurs in several verses here. Verse 24, toward the end of the verse, we read the phrase, "terror in the land of the living." Verse 25, a little over halfway down in the verse, we read, "terror was caused in the land of the living." And in verse 26, we read, "terror in the land of the living." Verse 27, the last part of verse 27, "terror of the mighty in the land of the living." And in verse 32, he says, "for I have caused my terror in the land of the living." So I believe it's safe to say from Ezekiel chapter 32 that the land of the living is a place of terror. And we see on several different occasions in Psalm 27, David said he would not fear in the land of the living, that is, in the land of terror. This world is a place of terror. Now, with all of that in mind, why? Why in the world do God's people many times insist on following the lifestyle, in following the life that is lived in the land of the living? It is a life that we ought to be seeking to escape, not to be indulging in. So, considering all of this, we see life in the land of the living, for most, is bondage. Almost everyone you see today is in bondage. Well, really, we all are to some degree. But it is a place of bondage. It is a place of defeat. I can never remember a time in my life where, and I'm not talking about God's people, I'm just talking about people in general, where people are so unhappy as today. I mean, just go somewhere and watch people and you will see a path of misery walking by you. That's what it is. People are miserable. People are angry. People are unhappy. And they say, well, it's the political situation. No, that's not it. It's the sin situation. It's the draining effect of the land of the living. So it's a place of bondage. It's a place of defeat. It's, as we've already seen, it's a place of weariness. It's a place of frustration. You get very frustrated with life in the land of the living. It's a place of discouragement. The world is a very discouraging place. Again, just read what is implied here in Psalm 27 concerning the land of the living, and it's a very discouraging place. It's a place of great confusion. It's a place of restlessness. It's a place of where that is joyless. But for the child of God, it should be different. The wonderful thing is, even though we live in the land of the living, a place of terror, a horrible place, we can live a wonderful life. But again, in verse 13, David is saying, the Lord made the difference in my life. I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. So now let's go back to Psalm 27 again, and let's look at the difference that God made in the life of David in the land of the living. And it's the same difference that you and I ought to live every single day. What is being described here in Psalm 27 is the abundant life. It is a life of enjoying God. And as you read Psalm 27, you do not see, you do not hear discouragement in David. You hear a man who is experiencing the Lord in the land of the living. Again, the land of the living is a place of terror. It's a horrible place. But it starts out with the Lord is. And then we see in verse 13, the Lord is in the land of the living. That gives you and I an opportunity to live a wonderful life. If the Lord is in the land of the living, that means that I can live experiencing God. And we see that this is pictured all through this psalm. Notice again, verse 1. Notice several things about the experience in life of a child of God. And again, David is speaking, using personal pronouns all through Psalm 27. He's speaking of a relationship that he has with the Lord in the land of the living. He says, the Lord is my light. He doesn't just say, the Lord is light, that's true, but he says, the Lord is my light. That is, he knew the Lord is light. That is, that he experienced the Lord's light in the land of the living. Again, the world, the implication is the world's a place of darkness. But God made the difference in David's life, and he said, "The Lord is my light." That is, even though I live in a place of darkness, I have light. And the Lord is my light. There are a lot of artificial lights today. You ever sit out in your porch or your deck at night and turn on the porch light and just watch the moths just bang up against it? They'll kill themselves doing what? Trying to reach artificial light. People in the world are the same way. Artificial light. The land of the living is filled with artificial light, and people bang their heads against that all day long until they eventually burn themselves up on it. Artificial light. You and I that know the Lord should not be flying toward the artificial light, banging our heads against the artificial light, bringing our life in danger with artificial light. The Lord is my light. Why would I want artificial light when the Lord is my light? He experienced the Lord as his light. He goes on to say, "And my salvation." That is, the Lord is my deliverer. There are many pitfalls in the land of the living. There are many times that we fall. There are many traps that we can fall into. There are many prisons that we can get ourselves into, that we can put ourselves in. But the Lord is the deliverer out of all of those things. And the psalmist, of course, he had experienced the Lord's deliverance. He also says, "The Lord is the strength of my life." Why would I, or why would you, depend on the strength of the land of living when the Lord's strength, is available? The Lord is my strength in the land of living. The Lord is my strength. The land of living has a powerful draining effect. If you live your life in the land of the living, I mean caught up with the land of the living, you will be drained of every spiritual drop that's in you. It has a draining effect. But the Lord is our strength. We don't have to be drained by the lifestyles and the ways of the land of the living. The Lord is my strength. We notice also in verse 2 that he experienced victory in the land of the living. Again, most people in the land of living live lives of defeat. I mean, just watch people in general. They are defeated. They live lives of defeat. Look at most of God's people. The same is still true of them as well. But we see in verse 2 that the enemies and the foes came upon me to eat up my flesh. They stumbled and fell. That is, he had victory over his enemies. Everywhere you go in the land of living, there are enemies. Even those who pretend to be your friends, and if you wait long enough, will prove to be an enemy many times in the land of the living. The land of the living is filled with enemies. But there's victory. It's filled with confrontation. It's filled with attack. But the Lord gave him victory. You and I do not have to live in defeat. We can live victorious lives. We see also in verse 3, he says, "Though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear, though war should rise against me." So we have two things here, two possibilities. A host surround him, and though war rise against me, in this will I be confident. That is, that the Lord is. The Lord is my light. The Lord is my salvation. The Lord is my strength. And the Lord is my victory. We see he has confidence. He has assurance. In the land of the living, though it is a place of terror, though it is a horrible place, the child of God can live with assurance. The Lord makes a difference in our lives. Verse 4. "One thing have I desired." Now he's in the land of the living. It's the only place you can be when you've got breath. "One thing have I desired of the Lord, that will I seek after. So in the land of the living, as much vanity as is in the land of the living, it's filled with vanity. There is something in the land of the living worth seeking. There's something worth seeking. And it's not what most people are seeking today. This is why people are miserable today. They're seeking the wrong things. But we see, that will I seek after, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord. So there's something to seek in the land of the living. But we see also there's a very special place in the land of the living, the house of the Lord. And there's a very special privilege, a very special opportunity in relation to the house of the Lord, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord. I don't have to live in the mud of the land of the living. I can dwell in the house of the Lord. There's something worth seeking. There's a place worth going to. And notice, in that house of the Lord, we see to behold the beauty of the Lord. I mean, if you just look around, you spend your day just looking at people, you will be a miserable individual. But we have the opportunity to behold the beauty of the Lord in the land of the living. And what a difference it makes in our life to just behold the beauty of the Lord. Notice in verse 5, "For in the time of trouble, he," that is the Lord, "shall hide me in his pavilion, in the secret of his tabernacle shall he hide me." So we see the Lord hides us. That speaks of protection. The Lord is our hiding place. In the land of the living, though it's filled with enemies, though it's filled with foes, though it's filled with confrontation and attack, and though it is a place of terror, for the child of God, there is a hiding place. Read Psalm 90. There is a hiding place for the child of God. That hiding place, of course, is the Lord. He then goes on and says, "He shall set my feet upon a rock." The land of the living is a place of instability. But for the child of God, there is stability. Everyone around us, as far as the world is concerned, talking about lost sinners, they live in a very, they're very unstable. Their whole lives are unstable. But for the child of God, there is stability. Our feet are upon a rock. Why would you want to live in quicksand when you can stand upon the rock? Why would you be drawn to quicksand when you can stand upon the rock? Every child of God can have stability in their lives, even in the land of the living. This is a wonderful life that God has allowed you and I to live in the land of the living. Notice verse 6. He says, "And now shall mine head be lifted up above mine enemies round about me." Again, we have victory. We have victory in the land of the living. And because of this, he goes on to say, "Therefore will I offer in his tabernacle sacrifices of joy." So in the land of the living, we can worship God. The world doesn't worship God. But you and I can worship God. Why would we do those things that prohibit us from worshiping God in spirit and in truth? Here we are in the land of the living, a place of terror, a place of enemies, a place of danger, a place of darkness, and we can experience the Lord in such a way that we can worship Him. That we can worship Him in the land of the living. What an opportunity to worship God in the land of the living. Notice also there in verse 6, I will sing, yea, I will sing praises unto the Lord. It's a place of victory. It's a place of worship. It is a place of praise. Verse 7, hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. In the land of the living, we can lift up our voice to God. We can lift up our voice to God in prayer. You see, if you experience God in this way, in all the ways that we've mentioned thus far, you will not be sucked in by the lifestyles of the land of the living. You'll live above this world. Your life will be on a higher plane than the land of the living. And it's the Lord that makes a difference. It's a relationship with the Lord that makes all the difference, as we saw again in verse 13. He goes on, and again we see in verse 7, we have prayer in verse 8. When thou said, seek ye my face, my heart said unto thee. Now there's two things there. First of all, when thou said, he heard the Lord. He heard the Lord. Here we are in the land of the living. And you watch people today, they have godless lives. God doesn't speak to them. If he did, they wouldn't hear him anyway. They're oblivious to God. But the psalmist said, God spoke, and he heard. Here we are in the land of the living. And every day, we can hear God. And what does God say? Well, he says here, seek ye my face. That's fellowship. That's fellowship. And the psalmist said, my heart said unto thee, thy face, Lord, will I seek. Land of the living is a place where we can hear God. It is a place where we can fellowship with the Lord. And every day, you and I, if we are in a condition to do so, can have fellowship with the Lord. And if we knew anything at all about the blessings of fellowship with God, we would certainly make sure that there is nothing in our lives that would hinder, that would prohibit us from having fellowship with the Lord. This is the way for a child of God to get through the land of the living. Fellowship with the Lord. The Lord said, seek ye my face, and my heart said unto thee. There was a drawing. His heart was drawn unto the Lord. And here it is in the land of the living. We ought to be drawn to the Lord in fellowship. And then he goes on in verse 9, and he prays that the Lord would help him. In the land of the living, we experience, in more ways than you and I know, we experience the help of the Lord. But what a wonderful thing to be able to walk through the land of the living and just to be able to say, help me, Lord. What a wonderful privilege. The Lord is a very present help in trouble, we read in Psalm 46 in verse 1. And for the child of God, he or she can experience the help of the Lord. Again, in verse 10, when my father and mother forsake me. That is, again, as we've already said, there are terrible possibilities in the land of the living. Terrible possibilities. Terrible things can happen, humanly speaking. Terrible things. Then the Lord will take me up. What assurance. We know that some awful things can happen in our lives, in the lives of our loved ones. Awful things can happen in the land of the living. We also know this. Though awful things happen, the Lord takes us up. What does that mean? That means the Lord just picks us up. And He carries us, and He holds us. What an experience. And David personally experienced this as well. We see in verse 11, teach me thy way. We can be taught in the land of the living. In fact, every day we ought to be learning more and more about the way of God. Notice it doesn't say, teach me in thy ways. It's teach me in thy way, singular. So we can be taught. We ought to, again, the world's a place of confusion. The world's a place of ignorance. I mean, just watch 5 minutes of the news, and ignorance abounds. It's overflowing. But you and I can live in the land of living, being taught the way of the Lord. People are ignorant today. They're ignorant of the way of God. They don't have the slightest clue of what the Lord has to say about anything, nor do they care what the Lord has to say about anything. But you and I, we can live being taught the Lord. He goes on and he says, lead me. Not only do we have the teaching of the Lord in the land of living, we have the guiding of the Lord in the land of living. Why in the world would you and I want to walk through such a horrible place, such a dangerous place, and depend upon our own sense to lead us, when you have the Lord to guide you? And the truth is, if we were to pray more that the Lord lead us, people wouldn't get in the messes they're in if they would follow the leading of the Lord. So we see also in verse 13, I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. We can have faith. He says, I would have fainted in this land of the living, but I believed. I believed that I would see the goodness of God. David spent much time in caves, fleeing from Saul, away from the house of God, longing to be with the people of God, longing to be in the house of God. But he believed that one day he would see the goodness of God. If the only time you can believe is when everything is the way you want it to be, that's not faith. Every lost person has that. But this is, he believed in the land of the living. When you look around the land of the living, there's not much there to encourage you. But he believed. And that made the difference. So in the land of the living, in spite of everything that goes on in the land of the living, the child of God can believe. And every day we ought to be praying that the Lord would increase our faith. And then lastly, in verse 14, he says, wait on the Lord and be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. The idea of waiting upon the Lord speaks of two things. Well, it speaks of more than that, but we're going to mention two. It speaks of dependence upon God. In the land of the living, why would we want to depend upon anything in the land of the living when we can depend upon God? But the word wait also speaks of expectation. If you're waiting for something, you are expecting it. We ought to live. Our lives ought to be lives of expectancy. Expecting the Lord to do great things. Well, that ought to be our life. To a life of expectation. Not because of who we are. Certainly not because of the characteristics of the land of the living. I mean, if you look out at the land of the living, there isn't much good to expect. But if the Lord is, and the Lord is in the land of the living, then we have every reason to live lives of great expectation. But listen to God's people today. They're as downtrodden as the lost people, many of them. But our lives ought to be lives of expectation. So right before us, here in Psalm 27, is the abundant life. Here's the abundant life. Here is a life lived enjoying God. How offensive it must be to God. And we see indications of this in the book of Jeremiah by the questions that he asks Israel. How offensive it must be to God for God's people not to enjoy the Lord. For God's people not to enjoy the company of the Lord. But here we are in Psalm 27, we have the abundant life. And it is the life that every child of God can live. Certainly the life that every child of God ought to live. What a wonderful privilege we have. We have no idea. The Lord could pluck us out of the land of the living at any time. We have no idea how long we're going to be here. But however long that is, we ought to live life abundantly. Not in the enjoyment of the land of the living, but in the enjoyment of the Lord. So I ask you tonight, are you living life, experiencing, personally experiencing the Lord? As we've said many times, it's really, I believe many times, God's people are more depressed than lost people, and I believe there's a good reason for that. Because ignorance sometimes is bliss. In the world, they don't know a thing about God. And you fill your head with the knowledge of God, and then if that isn't real to you, that's pretty depressing. That's pretty depressing. To have all that knowledge of who God is and how wonderful life can be, and yet child of God nowhere near it, that's a depressing life. More so than a lost person who doesn't even know there's a God. So we have a wonderful privilege here in the land of the living. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.